Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Should I get married? Before you start sending messages to me or phoning me, advising one way or the other to get married or not, I should clarify that I'm addressing this issue not on my own behalf. I'm not asking myself or anyone else, should I get married? It is a question that many young or youngish spiritual aspirants ask or should be asking. Those who are older shouldn't be thinking of getting married. Marriage is something for young people, not for older people. At the present age, it goes on with older people also. Now, before I get into talking about this more, I should address the issue which is inevitably raised by someone when I talk on topics like this. Why should I, as a sannyasi, be discussing such things anyway? For a somewhat elaborate or structured discussion of this, please see my book, Mothers and Masters. I've been questioned why I wrote such a book. In brief, I have to instruct my disciples or anyone else who wants to listen, because the sannyasi is supposed to be the guru of all the varnas and all the ashrams. I'm supposed to instruct them in a manner that is suitable for their spiritual advancement. I don't like to and shouldn't get intimately involved in householders' problems and householders' affairs. But we see that Narad Muni, in the seventh canto of Bhagavatam, we find that Narad Muni, who is the guru of all of us, one of the prominent gurus of all of us, he instructed Yudhishthira Maharaj, who is a grihastha, of course, somewhat extensively about family duties. In the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, we find Narad Muni advising his disciple Priyavrata not to marry, but then acquiescing when Narad's own gurus, well, especially Lord Brahma as his guru, and Manu came and said, no, he should marry. And there are so many examples. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is legendary for his staunchness as a brahmachari, he would comment on this sometimes. That's in Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav. I have recorded that, how seeing the chart of, or just seeing the personality of some devotees, he said he will have to marry. It's a common quandary among young male devotees. For girls, the question, should I get married? The answer is yes, especially in India. In the West, the marriage institution is largely a mess. To be married and divorced and remarried is completely common. It's unquestioned. It's just the way people live. It's unusual if someone marries young and remains married throughout his life. So for girls, Srila Prabhupada did establish the what he called the Brahmacharini Ashram, which is something not accepted in orthodox Indian sampradayas, but Srila Prabhupada saw the need for that. because there's no protection in the home for young girls, traditionally young girls who want to practice spiritual life. They do so in their home condition. Svei svei karmanya bharata sangsidhim lapate naraha. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, remaining in one's own position and working according to that position, one can achieve all perfection. Naraha, all men can do, but men includes, it means mankind, it includes women also. Narad Muni also, when instructing Yudhishthira Maharaj about family life, he also spoke about the duties of women. There you go. Narad himself, great brahmachari. This talk is going to be mostly for young men, because women should get married. In India, still the family institution is strong. Not without difficulties, but it's strong. And for girls to remain unmarried is against the ordinary dharma recommended by Manu and all the compilers of dharma shastra. Srila Prabhupada referred to Vinshati Dharma Shastra, 20 dharma shastras, prominent ones. Dharma shastras are those which given by sages which give guidance on and rules on how to live in this world, conduct one's material life. So that is required. And if girls don't, if they want to just, then what do? Either they go out to work in some office or some in the modern age, and then they're subjected to the desires of men. It's not the proper way that young girl, they shouldn't. The point is that women should be restricted in whom they mix with. Men also. The restriction between men and women is a basic principle of any civilization, actual civilization. But that's not possible if women go out to work. If they remain at home, they remain a burden for their father and an anxiety for him also. Anyway, I won't get into it too much because I'm talking here about, it's understood for most women, at least in India up to the present time, that they should get married. And there are others who not, who don't. And what can you do? You can't. It used to be that they were married by force, as Srila Prabhupada used that term. But nowadays you can't do that. So a common quandary of young male devotees, should I get married or not? I started to put together a narrative for this talk recently when I received a letter from a disciple of mine, male, age 36, as I'll quote here, never married, who had recently joined the Brahmachari Ashram in one of the centers I oversee. Previously, he held a prestigious position in one of the world's most respected institutions. But he left that being attracted by Krishna consciousness. And after some time in the Brahmachari Ashram, I think about 2 years, something like this, he wrote to me as follows, Guru Maharaj, this disciple of yours is finding it difficult to adjust in the Brahmachari Ashram. As I see it, this is primarily due to the physical austerities. Being given permission, I had joined thinking that my body and mind would adapt to the conditions. Though I have been able to live a relatively plain life, still the ashram standards have always been a struggle for me. Most of the brahmacharis are very dedicated. They are also able to lie down at any place, walk on the muddy floor, barefoot, unperturbed, bear the son, and still continue with services. And also, though purity standards are unmatched, mundane cleanliness at times becomes an issue. Maybe he's, I don't know, maybe referring to the muddy floor. Due to these conditions, I have struggled with the routine ashram services, which others perform with relative ease. And I feel, due to this, I am seen as uncooperative, lazy, and bodily conscious. Also, Guru Maharaj, on the point of getting married, although I am strongly attracted to the opposite sex, I cannot bear the thought of being a supplier of lipsticks and saris and talking of silly things of the world and of expanding the network of relatives getting sucked into the society. I would find it even harder to live with a female companion than with the brahmacharis. My body has also completed 36 years of age. I hope marriage will remain out of the question. The whole letter is leading up to, I really need to get married. But it ends with, I hope marriage will remain out of the question. In my reply, a quote from my reply, I wrote, to live happily in the ashram, as do the other brahmacharis, simply requires a mental adjustment. Things like sleeping on the floor are not very difficult, and you can learn to tolerate things you don't like. I must say, to me, the fact that the whole ashram area is not paved and it's grass or mud floor, well, it's dirt floor, and when it rains, it becomes somewhat muddy. I never really thought about it myself as being a problem. Things like lying on the ground, bearing the sun. It's India. It's hot sun, right? It's not that you have to sit in the hot sun all day, but when you go from one part of the ashram to the other, you go in the sun. And you may have to do some service outside also. Things like sleeping on the floor are not very difficult, and you can learn to tolerate things you don't like. Every man should be responsible. It is improper to... This is continuing from my reply. Every man should be responsible. It is improper to avoid the difficulties of married life unless one is prepared to accept the difficulties of brahmachari life, or to want the facilities and comforts of home life unless one is prepared to accept responsibility for protecting and maintaining a wife and family. Yeah, you may not want to marry, but if you don't want to take the rigors of brahmachari life, then one should accept the responsibility of being married. There are so many young women in the world who require to be married. Children are to be produced. Just part of the part of life in the material world. it seems so obvious that it shouldn't need to be said. And someone has to do it. And it's not that all women are preoccupied with lipstick and... Yeah, that's there, that we find description in Shastra that women tend to be more bodily conscious, but some of them have very, very serious devotees. Some of them, many of them, very good, serious devotees. So it's not that every woman is materialistic. Then, that's finishing that quote. Now, if we desire to be free from the rigors of brahmachari life, well, actually, if we consider Grihastha ashram, there are many rules and regulations to be followed in that also. It's not that it's all comfort. Especially the brahmanas, they have to accept, they voluntarily accept austerities. traditional Brahmanas, they won't daily. They'll get up in the early morning, Brahma Muhurta, and they won't eat until late morning or midday, because they have so many things to do, so many observances in puja, sandhya vandana, well, even taking bath is a big thing, including sandhya vandana, puja, yajna, receiving guests. They haven't eaten all day, but they have to feed guests before they can themselves eat. So they have so many, it's an austere life. Vedic culture is meant for austerity. Even the Kshatriyas, they in the Vedic culture, the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas especially, they live an opulent life, or they can do. But they also, everyone has to observe fasting on prescribed days. Everyone has to perform Vedic duties, the Vaishya also, and Kshatriya, they should also bathe early in the morning, rise early in the morning, bathe even in the winter cold. So a Vedic life is regulated, and there are the ashram, Kshatriya and Vaishya, in which one is who is allowed to have some opulence and sense gratification, also allowed in Shudra life. But it's not meant for total indulgence, and Kshatriyas and Vaishyas who are allowed, are expected to accumulate wealth and have some comfort, they're also required to be married. Brahmana can be a brahmachari throughout life, but that's not meant for Kshatriyas or Vaishyas, and for Shudras there's no question. So Grihastha ashram is traditionally full of restrictions. This comfortable life, the idea that we should live very comfortably, is a product of it's a cheating idea given in the consumeristic society, in which we work hard to purchase fans and a plush apartment and have air conditioning and fridges and all these things which make life comfortable, but then we have to work so hard for this. And living in an apartment, you can get in Mumbai some apartment. There's some little apartment on maybe the 25th floor of a building, and it costs 2 crores, 3 crores, just for a little apartment. Whereas in the village, people are living, they don't have any fancy accommodation, but they have so much, they don't have, it's not a high-rise building, there's just to date in India, the village houses are still mostly single-story. And there's so much space all around them. There's so much land all around them. So what we think of as luxury is a kind of cheating. You have to work hard to get a little pigeonhole, Prabhupada used to call it, with you can get some comforts, but you don't have much time to enjoy the comforts because you're busy working and you're full of anxiety. As far as unrestricted sense gratification, well, we're not talking about that anyway, are we? The devotees who are talking about, I can't adjust to the rigors of brahmachari life. But unrestricted sense gratification, that's only for chandalas. Now, there are brahmacharis who seem to be going on well, and then just suddenly they flip, and then they want to get married. Okay, if you want to get married, all right, do it. Or they may say, no, I don't want to get married. But at the same time, they exhibit all the symptoms. They've been practicing as a brahmachari, but all of a sudden, No, no, I have to earn money on the pretext of supporting my mother and father, although they didn't think about that previously. It wasn't an issue previously. And the mother and father haven't been asking that you have to work to make money. Or all of a sudden, they just become attracted. They seem to be a good brahmachari, but all of a sudden they're attracted to some young girl. Or this we see fairly often. Now, it may be that in their mind they've been contemplating family life. Or it may be that there's just some flip, like Ajamil had a flip. And they say, no, no, I'm just working. I have to work to make money for my family. But actually, though they may not want to admit it even to themselves, there is the desire for family life, which, okay, we're not condemning you, but just we have to face up to it. That we have our conditioning. And let's live according to our requirements. If physically we require a situation where we want all the comforts that modern life offers, and then we should be married. Let's physically, it means mentally we're not in the right space. Literally, we're not living in the right place. Otherwise, if we don't own up to that, then we could go on throughout our life struggling with desires. Actually, we will struggle with desires throughout our life, or it may go on for many years before we come to a plateau where we're actually happy in Krishna consciousness without so much struggle from the battering of material desires. But if we're not on top of our desire, in brahmachari life, it's not that everyone who's a steady brahmachari is completely free of material desires, but they've committed themselves so deeply to the service of Guru and Krishna, the mission of Srila Prabhupada in our case, that the material desires which are there, they can't gain prominence in their mind. But if we're not in that mental space and we don't admit to ourselves that what is our conditioning, we may have to go through that up till the point of death, and then that carries us to another life. Grihastha life in Krishna consciousness, or in the Vedic culture more generally, is meant to regulate our desires. That we have a we're not prepared to be a brahmachari. We understand the need for austerity and for detachment. Philosophically, we understand, but practically, we're not ready. So then you go to the ashram where some comfort is allowed, with many restrictions, with responsibility, and then the desires can be regulated. Sexual indulgence is regulated, and one is able to produce children, which is the result of sex, and raise children and take the responsibility. And gradually, in this way, by regulating one's desire and going on practicing Krishna consciousness, can become detached. It may not happen when one is 16 years old or 26 years old, but if one goes through that process, then it should happen that when one panchasaudvang banang vrajet, by the age of 50, one should be ready to withdraw from direct involvement in family life and come to a platform of detachment. But if we haven't done that and we just live in some grey area where we're not, you can do it. You can remain unmarried, not living in the brahmacharya ashram, practicing Krishna consciousness, but not, but why should one do that? One's neither here nor there. I don't want to get married, but I'm not ready to be a brahmachari. But then that means you're not accepting any prescribed process to become purified. The brahmachari process is for purification. The grihastha process is for purification. But just being unmarried and not being a brahmachari. Brahmachari doesn't just mean unmarried. It means living in the brahmachari ashram. Brahmachari guru kule vasandanto guru hitan. Living in the guru griha. Living in the house of the guru in the brahmachari ashram. So, if one is not ready for that, but he's also not prepared to take up grihastha life, which is meant for purification, then he'll go throughout his life and not make progress. Krishna consciousness itself is a very powerful purifying force. No doubt, it's the most purifying. But at the same time, traditionally, it has been practiced on the background of Vedic culture, Varnashram culture, which Srila Prabhupada also wanted to establish all over the world, because we see that many, Srila Prabhupada himself saw that so many devotees, they take to Krishna consciousness, but they don't remain steady. They fall down, they may fall down even from sannyas. They're supposed to be a brahmana, but then they marry, they run off with someone's wife. So Srila Prabhupada wanted training, and then we can have actual brahmanas, actual kshatriyas, actual vaishyas, actual shudras, and actual brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, and actual brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyasi. Srila Prabhupada wanted this. He saw the need for it, which Krishna also sees the need for it. That's why Krishna says, chatu varnyam mayashrishtam guna karma vibhagasha. Krishna sees the need for it. Therefore, he makes this system of varnas and ashrams. So rather than going up and down, should I marry, should I not marry, if we're thinking, should I marry, we should marry. That's it, simple. Because if one is even contemplating that, that means one's not, one doesn't have the fixity of purpose that is required to remain as a brahmachari. That's all. Just honestly and honorably enter the grihastha ashram. The letter that I was written, which I quoted, it's not exactly that situation. It says, I wanted to be a brahmachari, but I can't make it, but I want to be a grihastha. Then where are you? You're not a, what is it? If you're either a brahmachari, a grihastha, a vanaprastha, a sannyasi, or a paramahamsa. So if you're not a brahmachari, you're not a grihastha, you're not a paramahamsa, then where do you fit in? You're not a chandala that we accept. We should accept Krishna's social system for purification and not try to avoid that thinking, I'm a devotee, I'm transcendental. Another bogus idea. Artificially thinking oneself to be transcendental. I'm going to read from a letter that Srila Prabhupada wrote to his very dear disciple, Jayananda Prabhu. Srila Prabhupada wrote this in 1967, when Jayananda was a new devotee. Everyone was a new devotee. Srila Prabhupada wrote to him, obviously in response to a query by Jayananda Prabhu. Regarding your dispute in your mind as to remaining a brahmachari, grihastha, or becoming a sannyasi, There is nothing to be bothered with. Anyone who is in full Krishna consciousness and is dedicating his life for Krishna is already a sannyasi, even if he is a married man. If you like, you can become a householder, and I've no objection to that. Our Vaishnava philosophy instructs to become vidvati sannyasis. This means a man who knows things as they are. Therefore, a devotee who knows that everything belongs to Krishna and that he is the proprietor of all, such a devotee is certainly a vidvati sannyasi. Our philosophy is that we should accept things as prasadam of Krishna and nothing for sense enjoyment. Anyone who accepts things for sense enjoyment, even if he is externally a saffron-dressed man, is not a sannyasi. So, when one is engaged in the service of the Lord, that person is already in the spiritual energy. And a sannyasi, and the real purpose of a sannyasi, is to transform himself from the inferior to the superior spiritual energy. If your consciousness is absorbed in Krishna, you are always a sannyasi, your ever well-wisher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. There's a dichotomy here, isn't there? Well, first, let me comment a little bit on that letter. The real point is to be absorbed in Krishna. That's the real point. Either as a brahmachari, grihastha, or sannyasi. But Srila Prabhupada doesn't say you just go to some imagined ashram of your own. Now, the dichotomy, I was going to go on to that. The dichotomy is that a sannyasi preaches, or should preach, and should have this outlook, that everything in this world is temporary. Let us look to the eternal. A sannyasi is supposed to give spiritual instruction. Everything is temporary in this world. Let us look to the eternal. A grihastha, he may protest, I'm living in this world. I have responsibilities. I have to pay my bills. You can talk about the eternal higher principle, but I'm involved, entangled at the lower level. So be realistic, he may say to the sannyasi. For me, it's not realistic to talk about all these things, but actually the sannyasi is being realistic in a more complete way. Both are being realistic. The sannyasi is pointing to the ultimate reality, and the grihastha is pointing to the immediate reality. They're both levels of reality. The sannyasi instructs the grihastha, yet you do your family duties, but at the same time, look to the eternal. Namashray. Namashray kari jatane tumi takaha apana kaje. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu summarized it. Take shelter of the holy name with full attention and care, and at the same time continue performing your work in this world. In Bengali it's sometimes said Hate kam mukhe nam. You do work with your hands, and with your mouth you chant the holy name of Krishna. So the sannyasi is required to preach to the grihastha, preach him to tell him, do your perform your family duties. Niyatam kuru karma tvam. Krishna told Arjuna, always do your duty. Karma jayo hi akarmana. Sharira yatra pichate na prasidyada karmana. You cannot even maintain the body without doing some work. Therefore, work is better than the idea of just dropping out of society, Krishna told Arjuna, is to do your prescribed work. Philosophically, brahmachari life makes sense. If we think, well, I have to become detached from this world so I can go to Krishna. But realistically, for many, it's required. Not for everybody. I'm not preaching to all the brahmacharis. Okay, folks, you've got material desires. You all have to get married. I'm not preaching that. If you're going on happily, regularly in brahmachari life, do it. But realistically, for many, they should go to grihastha life. I knew devotees, two devotees who were brahmacharis, but who committed suicide because they weren't able to give up their masturbation habit. They could have just got married. Getting married doesn't cure sex desire in and of itself, but it gives us the divinely ordained means to do so. There may be a tension between grihasthas and renunciants. It shouldn't be. There should be an understanding of each other's position. But there may be some tension. The renunciants, they may see the grihasthas as sense enjoyers, whereas the grihasthas may say, oh, the renunciants, they're fanatics, they're artificial. Go on, admit it. You got material desires, right? Yeah, I have material desires, but I'm able to remain steady in Krishna's service without being overly depressed or influenced by those material desires. So yeah, it's the duty of renunciants to stress on or to be fully concentrated on the nature of this world. Smara nityam anityatam. This material world, everything here is temporary. And his dharma, or how he approaches Krishna consciousness, is somewhat different to that of the grihastha. Sometimes it's said that brahmachari life, that is the quick path to self-realization, but it's also very dangerous. Whereas grihastha life is the slow but sure path. Of course, not completely sure, but it's the more safe. It's more safe that one doesn't, being protected by a wife, one is more safe from the danger of falling into gross illicit behavior. There are so many things to discuss. I won't get into all the details. I hope you can pick it all up. What is the harmonization of a grihastha who understands that human life is meant for God realization, and I really want to do more chanting and reading and get more and more into Krishna consciousness, but I'm stuck in my present situation. My present reality is far from ultimate reality. Well, it need not be so. Again, tako apana kaji, grihe tako, bane tako, sada hari bale dako. In family life, one can be fully Krishna conscious. Who's greater? A brahmachari who's struggling, or even a good brahmachari who's not struggling? Well, it doesn't mean you're a bad brahmachari if you're struggling, but a steady, fixed brahmachari, who's better? The average, steady, fixed brahmachari in ISKCON or Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Who's on a higher platform? We're all the brahmacharis in ISKCON worship the lotus feet of Bhaktivinoda Thakur by, for instance, regularly singing the songs that he has composed. Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, Jayo Jaya Gora Chanda, Sharira Vidya Jal, these are all part of ISKCON's liturgy. So that they're small nuggets of treasure from the huge repository of transcendental jewels that Bhaktivinoda Thakur Grihastha gave us. What's the harmonization? The harmonization is the same. Namashray kari jatane tumi, taka apona kaje. Do your home duties, home life, and at the same time, practice Krishna consciousness. Many of the difficulties that we see devotees at the present time face are due to the breaking down of the old stable family system. It used to be in the West even that the families were stable, people got married, they stayed married. It was a once in a lifetime they got married. Nowadays, well, it's been like that in the West. They don't have any real culture of arranged marriages, although it used to be that, at least in Ireland until fairly recently, you'd have to get permission from your parents to marry, even if you find the partner yourself. But that family culture was very strong in some places. In Italy, was famously very strong. That's breaking down there also. Everywhere it's breaking down. And increasingly throughout the world, and absolutely in the Western world, they're very proud of their civilization, but actually it's a mess. Marriage in the Western world mostly goes on by the Bhagavad Gita method. What? What am I talking about? What am I talking about? Dhyato vishayan pungsa sangas te shupajayate sangat sanjayate kama kama krodhas vijayate krodhad bhavati sammoha sammohat smriti vibramaha smriti brangshad buddhi nasho buddhi nashat pranashyati. As Srila Prabhupada comments in later in the in his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, talking about the Vishayendriya Samyogam, how happiness in the mode of passion is based upon the contact of the senses with the sense objects. So Srila Prabhupada gives the example, a young man is attracted to a young woman and they join together, they get married, and or they don't bother getting married, but they just have sex. So what happens? You become attracted. And then, but you meditate upon that person, and then you join with them. Dhyayato vishayan pungsang sangas te shupajayate. One becomes attached to them. Sangat, and then a very strong desire arises, and then anger arises. From what I understand, the term krodh in this connection means not necessarily the husband and wife are fighting each other, but one aspect is also frustration. Then krodhad bhavati sammoha. One's already bewildered to be influenced so much by karma, by material desire. But then as one becomes involved, frustrated, the janasya moho yamaham ameti, the result of man and woman joining is home, wife, family, friends, identification with the country and community, children, property. And in this way, one is bewildered thinking in terms of I, me, and mine. So then one may forget, if one had any idea of spiritual consciousness, it becomes sidelined. And one's intelligence becomes completely spoiled and one loses the thread altogether. So this is the Bhagavad Gita method of getting married, or how one's downfall is precipitated by contact between man and woman. But there is another way to approach it, that in the Varnashram system, one marries, why? Putrarte kriyate bharya. One marries for the sake of having a son. There's Bhaktivinoda Thakur in one of his songs, one of his autobiographical songs. He says, how does that go? Dharma smarya, smarya grihine kor takon grahan karela mami, something like that. He says, then remembering dharma, my duty within dharma, I accepted the hand of a wife. One marries, yes, lust is there, desire is there, but the sense of duty is very prominent. Many difficulties arise because the varnashram system is broken down, because the family system is broken down, the family institution is absolutely a pillar of varnashram. Srila Prabhupada, he mentions in one of his early purports in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the student communities, the brahmachari communities, are no longer being maintained and householders do not observe the rules and regulations of the grihastha ashram. Good brahmacharis can make good grihasthas, especially talking about those who are trained from a young age, the brahmacharis, which is why in the pilot varnashram communities that myself and some other devotees are involved in, we are training boys in Gurukul, and then we want, or we're directing them under the guidance of their incorporation with their parents for marriage, so that they can marry relatively young, set a good example of responsible family life, become the next generation in our pilot varnashram communities, raise children who can carry on that, or carry on what they have learned, and this way reestablish the tradition and themselves become detached. What they've learned in brahmachari life, they'll continue to practice in grihastha life, and then they're married young, they have children young, and they retire when they're still physically and mentally strong enough, by the age of 50 or whatever. Very big discussion. So many points about this. Just giving a digdarshan, a little hint. Basic point is that all men should be responsible. They should either be a good brahmachari or be a good grihastha, and don't dither in between. Be a good devotee. This Krishna has given a system which helps us to be good devotees and actually fulfill the purpose of our life, which is to go back home, back to Godhead, by becoming fully Krishna conscious, which naturally involves becoming free from all material desires. Bancha kalpa tarupyascha kripa sindhu evacha patita nam pavane bhyo vaishnave bhyo namo namaha.